Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. What a beautiful morning, right? Every morning is a beautiful morning unless you're walking your dog and your dog is reactive to other dogs. What do you do? We'll talk with author and former Chicagoan Jeff Millman. Jay Spainauer is the owner of Tucker Pups. I go to an anti-cruelty event and there you are, Jay. I go to another anti-cruelty event and there you are. I go to still another anti-cruelty event and guess what? You're there. What is your connection with anti-cruelty, which is wonderful? That's a good thing.
Sure. We've been working with anti-cruelty for many, many years. When we opened 18 years ago, we started coming to the Bark in the Park event, and we've been coming ever since. At some point, soon after we opened, we started offering free agility at the Bark in the Park. So that's been a very fun and successful component of that event, and something that's a big draw for people. We've also partnered with them in terms of offering training at their facility. So we've offered training classes, including basic manners, puppy classes. We've done leash reactivity classes, agility classes. We've done all sorts of things like that. We also kind of consult with them and have consulted with them on some training cases. And they do refer customers to us who are trying to adopt dogs and are experiencing lots of behavioral issues, especially because the dogs who in any rescue, a lot of those dogs are going to have some issues related to separation anxiety and PTSD and emotionally based issues like that. So they do refer customers to us to help with those issues.
So I want to make it clear, based on what you said, that if you adopt a dog, there is absolutely no assurance that that dog is going to have any behavior issue whatsoever. What we do know is that dogs that have been relinquished multiple times are more likely to have some problems, which may include separation anxiety, which is a very difficult problem to deal with. And we're going to circle back and talk a little about that, Jay. First of all, what does Tucker Pups do?
So Tucker Pups is a large dog daycare, dog boarding, grooming, and training business. So we do everything under one roof aside from dog walking and pet sitting. So we're kind of the lifestyle that we offer to people after they adopt their dog to create happy dogs and healthy dogs. Most people, when they get a dog, they're going to need to travel. They want to socialize their dog. They're going to need grooming. And for certain, they're going to likely need training. And so we can help them with all of those things.
And I want to talk about all those things. I want to start with boarding. When looking for a boarding facility, what should someone look for, or better yet, also, what should that person do? And here's what I'm getting at as I ask a very leading question. Is it a good idea to come and visit the place, or is it a necessary idea, might be a better way, to visit the place you're ultimately going to board your dog and make sure that it feels good for you?
Absolutely. We strongly recommend coming in for not only a tour, but to bring your dog in for a free trial day. And we think that that is very, very important. You should also ask lots of questions. If you feel like you're not getting straight answers, that's certainly a red flag. But those are very important to do. Also, reading the reviews. Those reviews, of course, some people over-exaggerate, but for the most part, you can get a very good sense about a place from their reviews on Yelp as well as Google. But I think another really important question is, what are the dogs doing throughout the day when they're boarding? A lot of people have these misconceptions about dog boarding because they've only ever asked their vet about it or something like that, where the dogs are in a cage the entire time. And that probably would be a negative experience. However, in our case, the dogs are out in play throughout the day. And we do separate them into play groups based on their size and their temperament. So in our case, the dogs are very happy. They're playing with dogs that are of the same size. So Yorkies are only playing with other Yorkies and other smaller dogs. Labs are playing with Labs and Golden Retrievers. And that differentiation of play groups is the number one way that we make sure that the play works really well. And in our case, we do have a large outdoor area that has grass made for dog play, We have shade and pools and things like that. So the dogs not only get to play indoors, but they get to play outdoors. And because it's the grass, they get to run a lot more than they would on an epoxy floor. That helps them wear themselves out. They sleep better at night. They go home tired. It makes for an overall great experience for them. But certainly, I think that just asking the right questions, coming for a tour, seeing for yourself, you cannot judge a place by its website. And I think that a lot of people fall prey to that, where it's kind of like a vacation resort in Florida. If all you saw was the website, you might think it's great. And then you get there and there's geese in the pool and green algae. You really need to come see it for yourself before making that decision.
And it sounds like there's sort of two buckets. One is doggy daycare. And one is a true boarding facility. I mean, I'm going away for a vacation for a week, so I want to board my dog here all week. Is that true for you? You offer both those things?
Yeah, so we have daycare for customers who are just bringing their dog throughout the day while they're at work. And then we do dog boarding, which is very similar. However, there's a lot more to it in terms of feeding dogs and medicine and all the things like that. But the daily experience is very similar for them in terms of being in play. So while we do have daycare and boarding separately, we do integrate those dogs onto the play floors throughout the day.
But how do you deal with the fact that, okay, dogs that come for daycare – they may come 3 days a week, whatever it is, for weeks and weeks and weeks, maybe the whole year. And mm-hmm. they know many of the other, they have doggy friends, if you will. They know the other dogs. Where a dog that's being boarded probably doesn't know other dogs. So how do you do that integration?
It's a great question, and it is very tricky. One thing is that if your dog is kind of newer to the experience, we do try to have them arrive early. We advise that of our customers all the time, to have your dog on the play floor as early as possible instead of entering a room full of 30 dogs. So that is one important thing. The other is that a lot of our boarding dogs do come pretty frequently. They are used to the place. And certainly there's going to be new dogs all the time, but we do have a lot of regulars as well. And I think that dogs talk to each other in ways that humans cannot see or understand. So when they walk onto a play floor and the other dog's tails are wagging, the dogs are not looking dominant or aggressive, that calms everything down. So actually the daycare dogs help stabilize the entire experience. If all you had was boarding dogs without that mix in of regular daycare dogs, it probably would be a little more challenging, but they do kind of regulate each other. And when a new dog comes onto the play floor, usually within a few minutes, they're running around and playing just like all the others. We do have, we ask a lot of questions of new customers, and we try to make sure this is the right experience for them. If a customer says, my dog has never been in play, he's scared of playing and things like that, we will normally tell them this may not be the best place for you because your dog might be too stressed and too anxious. We do offer a free trial day to help the dog get used to it. But we do stress that daycare is not a place for your dog to learn to play with others. It does assume that your dog is already fairly comfortable with that. But of course, that is a gray area because many people don't take their dogs to dog parks and things like that. So they're not even sure themselves how their dog is going to react. If there are any issues, we do call a customer right away. We'll also take a dog into a smaller play group to help them get used to it. There's just a lot of things that we do to make the experience go as smooth as possible, and it does work out 99.9% of the time.
All right. I like those chances. A great answer, by the way. I'm curious what you do with older dogs. I will ask about that. And also, I want to talk with you a bit about agility, which I see you do. Well, let me rephrase that. I see you oversee the dogs doing. You're not saying follow me, and then you're jumping through those things, although that wouldn't be a bad idea. We'll talk with Jay Spanauer, or at least continue the conversation, from Tucker Pups when we come back on WGN. Talking to Jay Spanauer of Tucker Pups. Where is Tucker Pups?
Sucker Pups is located in the West Loop of Chicago, which is a neighborhood right next to downtown. It is one of the fastest growing and unfortunately becoming one of the more expensive neighborhoods in the city. But it is kind of the hottest neighborhood in Chicago. We've been here for close to 20 years before it became hot. We were here when it was just Harpo Studios and Johnny's Ice House, and now it's exploded into high rises and Whole Foods and Targets and hot restaurants and all sorts of things. We are, to be a little more specific, we are two blocks north of the McDonald's World Headquarters and right across the street from Google Headquarters.
And clearly, you are working for the Chamber of Commerce now for the West Loop. So, Jay, I want to talk to you about we're talking about boarding dogs and also having them go for daycare. And you're talking about integrating dogs and dogs actually having fun. And, you know, on occasion, people will say, oh, my dog's having a great time. I can tell because my dog comes home and does nothing but sleep. Some of those dogs, not necessarily at your place, but some of those dogs come home that way because they were so incredibly anxious at the facility, and people don't really see what's going on there, so they don't know that. Can you give tips for people as to how they know their dog actually, because the dogs can't email and say, I'm having a great time, so how do they know?
That is a great question. One way that they would know, and for us, the most important way, is the next time they come back, does the dog want to come through the door or does he put the brakes on and pull backwards? In our case, if you were to watch the dogs on any given day, they're bounding through the door. They're not even remembering their owner. They're just happy to be here, and they're saying, bye, Mom, which hurts some of the owner's feelings that their dog loves us more than they love their owner, it seems to them in that moment. But the dogs tell us in that way. Having said that, in our case, if a dog is acting really stressed or anxious, we are going to call the owner and we're going to talk about it. We're going to reduce the dog's playtime. We're going to give him more nap time and break time and possibly even one-on-one time with dog handlers. Our goal is to make every dog happy and healthy. So if your dog is being stressed and anxious, that doesn't do anybody any good for us to try to hide it from you. Our goal is to be as transparent as possible and help the customer become part of the solution. Maybe they're going to offer some tips to help their dog become happier, but we are in communication with them and just talking about what is happening. In addition to that, we do send photos to customers of their dogs in play, and that really gives people the peace of mind that their dog is happy. They can see that they're playing. They can see the smile on their dog's face, and that goes a long way towards alleviating not only the dog's stress, but also the customer's stress, because a lot of people, when they're on vacation, they are worried about their dog. And we completely understand that. So we want to put them at ease, and sending them photos really helps do that.
Oh, yeah, I can understand that for sure. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for we're talking play groups now is the supervision of those groups and not having too many dogs, being careful about who those dogs are. We talked about that part of it, but we haven't talked about supervision. Who watches those dogs?
Yeah, and it's a very important question because there's a lot of dog daycares that have way too many dogs and not enough staff, and the staff they do have are untrained and people who don't seem to care as much, and we hear horror stories like that all day, every day about other places, not naming names, but I think that's actually true in every city in America. In our case, we look for people who, first of all, are very passionate about dogs. These aren't just people who say they had a dog when they were a child, but these are people who want to work with dogs professionally. And we ensure that we limit the number of dogs that we have so we don't overrun the place with too many at once. We rotate dogs in and out of play floors to give them breaks, and we always make sure that there's at least 2 to 3 people in a play group at all times. There's a lot of places that might only have one person in a play group of 30 to 40 dogs, and that's extremely dangerous because if a fight broke out or anything happened, there's no way that they could handle that situation. So we always have 2 people. We also have cameras that are monitoring all the play floors, and the managers are constantly watching those. And We have walkie-talkies where we're communicating back and forth. So everything is a very well-oiled machine to ensure that things are running smoothly. And the most important thing on top of all that is if we were to find that a staff member or dog handler were, for example, looking at their phone or not paying attention or whatever, they would be in pretty big trouble for something like that. And if it continued to happen, they would not be working for us anymore. Now, having said that, I will tell you our turnover is very low. Most of our staff have been here for many years. And that stability in the staff is really what makes it a smooth operation because they know the dogs, they know their behaviors, they know the routine. They make sure that it all runs very, very smoothly. And that's very important.
We only have 2 minutes left, a little less, actually. So what about older dogs?
So with older dogs, we definitely are cognizant of the fact that they should not be in play throughout the day. One of the things that we offer is what we call an extended border option. And that is where a dog can be in play half the day instead of the full day, and then the next day it might be out of play for the entire day just to give them breaks. But we know that what they really want is to sleep, and so we're very cognizant to give them as much of that rest time as possible. And we have technology that we have created in terms of software and iPods and iPhones and all kinds of technology to make sure that the staff know that, hey, this dog has been in play for this many hours. He needs to go take his break now, and then we're going to bring him back in 3 hours and things like that. So that's really important to do that.
Yeah, it sure is. And you don't want to have injuries. And too much of a good thing can create that as well. Jay Spanauer, Tucker Pups. Give me the address one more time of where Tucker Pups is at.
Sure. We're at 219 North Carpenter, which is in West Loop / Fulton Market at the corner of Carpenter and Fulton.
All right. And also the website.
TuckerPups.com.
Perfect. Jay, thank you so much and continue working with anti-cruelty, as I'm sure you will.
Thank you very much, Steve.
I've talked about how tick disease is an epidemic. Not too strong of a term. For people, as well as for our dogs. Dogs are a sentinel for us for tick disease. And if tick disease is out there, your dog may get it first. Except you can prevent tick disease in your dog. We can do more to prevent tick disease in dogs than we can in ourselves. And it's a mistake to believe that tick disease only occurs out in the woods, though it does. Lyme, for example, has been identified with surprising and increasing frequency in urban areas like Chicago. So here's what happens. People go away to Wisconsin for a couple of days, a long weekend, or Michigan, or they simply go to a park, a big forested park like Bussy Woods or Lincoln Park in the city, or not necessarily even a smaller park. And their dog comes back with a tick, which, guess what? Gives dogs Lyme unless you prevent. Talk to your veterinarian about prevention. The name of this book is Triggers and Reactions, A Guide to Fixing Dog Behavior Problems. This is Volume 1, Unleash Aggression. Jeff Millman, a dog trainer, is the author, a former Chicagoan. He's left us. Oh, I'm so sad about that, Jeff. But I love the book, and I want to talk to you about the very notion. When I was talking to you off the air, you said something, if only we can be nice to our dogs. I mean, you would think we wouldn't have to tell people that.
Right. Yeah. And usually people are, and you know, everyone I think truly has the best intentions, but it's overwhelming. It's like, you know, I have kids, it's like raising kids. There's so much information coming at you and everyone's just trying to do the best they can. I do appreciate that. But what I really want everyone to know is that you don't have to battle. You don't have to take a dog's behavior and mold them into this perfect little robot. You can take what they naturally do and help them become comfortable and what people call well-behaved. I just call nice to hang out with and be your buddy and listen to you and all those things that everyone wants. But it can be a very smooth, gentle process if you know what you're doing.
Why does unleash aggression occur in the first place?
Yeah, so basically there's a number of factors. As a lot of people know, you can take some dogs off leash. They act like complete angels. you put the leash on and they turn into Cujo. And there's many reasons. Number one, their options are limited when they're on leash. They can't run away if they're under duress, and they can't move forward, which I talk a lot about in my book as far as frustration and whether a dog wants to go attack another dog or go say hello to a dog. The leash prevents that and increases frustration and associated reactivity. The other part of the equation is the other dog. If a dog is on leash and is tense and stressed and wants to move in a certain location and can't do that because of the leash, they can look aggressive because one sign of aggression is stiffness. So by definition, if a dog is stiff, they can be viewed as aggressive to another dog. And then if that dog is a little nervous to begin with, especially, that dog can start being aggressive, and then it's just an explosion. It's just a bad relationship at that point. And then you just start going down the rabbit hole of bad situations. So the limited options and the body language issues are really the main factors for that.
So before talking about how to fix the problem, which we will, there's one thing I want to talk to you about that you spend a lot of time in the book describing, and I think this is important. It's called trigger stacking. Describe what that is and why that's important to understand.
Yeah. It's what I talk about that a lot. It's really important to understand it. The way I explain it to my clients is if you don't understand, it can be very surprising and frustrating when it happens. So there's different types of trigger events that can happen, either stacking or compounding. And stacking, for instance, is if a dog guards their bones, a lot of people know that's called resource guarding. They're not super comfortable with toddlers, and then they're also less comfortable in the living room, for instance, and a toddler toddles up to them and touches them in the living room while they're chewing on a bone. That incident, it can be an explosion of behavior because everything's happening at once. So the triggers are stacked, and it can be a much more pronounced aggressive behavior if that happens. Compound behaviors, which is the other type of triggering that can be confusing, is if a dog experiences multiple triggers without enough time to calm down or get back to a stable state before the next trigger happens. For instance, if dogs do not like fire trucks and they are a little uncomfortable with joggers running too close, and then it's, you know, there's a thunderstorm happening, a fire truck goes by, 5 minutes later, a jogger goes by, and then a thunderstorm happens, that dog can be so stressed out that someone reaches down to pet him and they can actually bite, not because of that one trigger, but because of the compounding effect, and their cortisol levels and the different things are high, and they just didn't have enough time to calm down, so they get more and more stressed.
So if that person did come up to pet the dog and nothing else was going on in the environment you described, or maybe only one thing was, like that fire truck went by,
right,
then the dog likely wouldn't have that cortisol level be right, such as it is where the dog bites. However, the combination of factors, either stacking or compounding, then can cause a dog to react in a certain way. That's
exactly.
And I think this is really something, I'm glad you wrote about it as you did, because I think it's important to understand. One more thing is that dogs generally don't wake up in the morning saying, I really want to be aggressive today. I want to bite somebody. It is generally fear in the first place that creates that anxiety that causes ultimately a dog to bite. There's so many other factors, such as a dog giving warning that we're not paying attention to, or maybe the stacking of triggers we're not paying attention to, as you describe. But overall, explain why dogs may be aggressive in the first place.
Yeah, I love that question. So basically, you mentioned fear, and a lot of trainers agree with this concept that most aggression, or you could argue all aggression, has some basis in fear. Basically, the way I talk about it is a dog is either uncomfortable with what has happened in the past, uncomfortable with what's about to happen, or what's uncomfortable with what's happening now. And their response is to say either politely or more aggressively, please get away from me. I don't like what you're doing. And as you mentioned, if someone doesn't pay attention to their signals, it makes perfect sense for them to say, hey, I thought I was communicating properly. I am very uncomfortable right now. If you don't move away, I have no other option but to continue till I'm uncomfortable, to tell you I am uncomfortable. And one way to do that is to bite you. And if you don't move away, I will bite you again. So, you know, biting is part of the dog DNA. You know, I talk about dogs don't run up trees if they're under duress. They bark, bite, growl, or run away is one of their options, but they don't dig holes and hide or run up trees. So if a dog is showing a fear response or an aggressive response, there's something in the environment that they're simply not happy with or comfortable with, and they're trying to change that event to release the pressure and make them more comfortable.
And there's one other factor you didn't mention that here, but you mentioned it in the book, actually, and that's socialization. So a dog may simply not understand what's happening because the dog has had no previous experience because the dog wasn't socialized properly. And when that happens, and there are many experiences, hence your triggers, say you have a dog that's out in the country and grew up out in the country, beautiful country area, but really wasn't socialized to the big city, or a dog that wasn't socialized to lots of different people. That dog now is experiencing something the dog never experienced before. But the big question, the million-dollar question, maybe the author will give me $1 million, I don't know, will be, well, okay, so that's the theory behind all this. Now I understand why it's happening, but what do I do about it? The name of the book, Triggers and Reactions, A Guide to Fixing Dog Behavior Problems. We'll talk with dog trainer Jeff Millman some more when we come back on WGN. Jeff Millman is the author of Triggers and Reactions, A Guide to Fixing Dog Behavior Problems. So I'm reading the book. It's really good. And then I come to the part where it's about, okay, here's why these problems occur with aggression, specifically on leash, with so many dogs. But what do you do about it? And that's where it took a turn. And I thought you were going to write about all these things that can work, because I know you well enough to know you're only going to support positive reinforcement. However, you're not going to use shock collars or any of that. And I want to talk about that because too many trainers still do. However, you said let's clicker train. And I haven't talked about that on the radio in a while. And the impression by some or misconception is you cannot use clicker training for aggression. Now, first of all, what is clicker training so people understand?
Yeah. So a clicker, the history, we you and I talked about a little bit. Karen Pryor came up with this strategy. She worked with dolphins in the 60s and she trained dolphins, and she realized, wow, we can use this with a lot of other animals as well. So she's kind of the mother of clicker training, super amazing, wonderful woman. Basically what happens is it's simply a marker. It marks either a behavior or it can mark an event. So it's not a remote control. I talk about this all the time. It's not a remote control. It's not designed, or it shouldn't be used this way, to start behavior or stop behavior. It's not electronic. It's not hooked up to anything. It just simply is a noisemaker turned into a really cool positive reinforcement training tool. And if you are using it the way that I recommend, you mark an event that you want to evaluate your dog's response. And since a clicker always means a treat is coming shortly after, what I recommend is standing behind your dog. As soon as they look at a trigger, let's just say dogs, that's a very common trigger that dogs react to. As soon as your dog looks at another dog, stand behind them so they are facing the dog and closer to the dog than you are. As soon as they see the dog, click, and it sounds like this. And
Do that again, Jeff, a little bit louder.
Oh, sure.
Still didn't pick it up on the microphone, but what this is, it's a, because I want to describe this. So Karen, as you said, was working with dolphins, and, you know, very famously, we all know that there's the dolphin whistle. I don't know that she invented that per se, but she might have. I don't know. But
yeah,
she said,
sorry if I misspoke.
No.
I made a mistake there.
No, you did not. So I just want to explain so people understand. So instead of a whistle, which we don't necessarily want to use for dogs, she thought, what can we use? And it's a little box that's like an inch by an inch and a half or something. It's not big. And it makes a clicking sound. And that's a novel sound that isn't going to be heard elsewhere in the environment. It's consistent. It sounds pretty much the same every time you click the clicker. Now, let's begin. You have a dog that is a bit aggressive on leash, and that's where you were going. What's our step number one?
Yeah, thank you for clarifying all that. So basically, if you have taught your dog that a click means a treat, which the process is just called clicker charging, and it describes it clearly in the book, you teach the dog that a click always is followed by a phenomenal, yummy treat. And then you can use it to evaluate your dog's response to any trigger that he experiences, he or she. So let's just say there's a dog walking side to side, and your dog is in front of you, which is what I recommend. As soon as your dog looks at the other dog, click and evaluate his response. If he doesn't care about the other dog and is more interested in the treat, he will turn around and say, oh, tasty treat behind my head. Of course I'll turn around. But if anything changes from the normal response to the clicker when you're sitting in your living room with no dogs present, you can take that information and analyze and determine, is my dog excited / frustrated and wanting to go play with that dog? Or is he nervous, scared, and wanting to go possibly bite that dog or bark or growl or whatever? And then you can make an adjustment in the location of where that dog is using humane movement is really the strategy. I always say that the only option if your dog doesn't respond to the clicker or if your dog gets agitated is to move him or her to a new location. And then you can move to a location where your dog is comfortable and get back to work by desensitizing him is what we've been talking about. Desensitizing him to the trigger that he has shown to be a little distracted or nervous around. And it's a very methodical, gentle process. And what I have this conversation with my clients and then I'll say, let's just go outside and I'll show you. It takes 10 seconds to do it and it takes 15 minutes to describe it. And what I'll tell them is just when you see a dog, watch your dog's head. As soon as your dog looks at the other dog, click. If your dog turns around, congratulations. You are now desensitizing your dog to that trigger.
Okay, so what if the dog doesn't turn around? I'm not clear on that. So, if the dog is still, so the clicker is not yet working, if you will.
Right.
Then what happens?
Yeah. So then what you have to do is find a new location where the clicker is more interesting than the other dog. And very counterintuitively to what most people will tell you, as opposed to pulling back where you're still gaining distance, let's say you start at 10 feet away and your dog stops responding to the clicker at 10 feet away. Let's pretend you have to be 20 feet away before your dog is comfortable again and can turn away from the other dog. Instead of pulling back, you actually safely move forward and by the other dog. Safely is the key. You don't want any biting happening. But then you go forward, and what happens is whether a dog wants to play with another dog or whether a dog wants to growl and bite another dog, if you always take that dog out of the picture and just bail out of there and go the other direction, their frustration goes up and their social skills go down. So allowing them to communicate with the dog, even if it's barking, which sounds strange, but it really, really, really works. Even if they're barking as they're passing the dog, as long as you have enough safe space to move, eventually your dog will calm down and then the clicker will, what I say, start working again, meaning it is more interesting than the other dog.
All right. It's described in detail because it's hard to get all this on the radio, but detail with images about how to do what Jeff is talking about in the book. And the book is called Triggers and Reactions, A Guide to Fixing Dog Behavior Problems, Volume 1, Unleash Aggression. Jeff Millman, M-I-L-L-M-A-N, is the author. And you can get the book on Amazon, Jeff?
Yes. Amazon, Dogwise, and then a digital version on Kobo.
All right. And your website is?
JeffMillman.com.
All right. That's Millman with one L, please.
Oh, two L's. No.
Oh, jeez. Can I do that again, Matt? Sorry. How much do I have? Okay. That's Milman with two L's, Jeff Milman. Hold on. What's the website, Jeff? I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. It's jeffmilman.com.
Okay. I'll pick it up right after that. So, Jeff, I have one more question for you before we go. And that question is, can nearly all dogs be helped to the point where you can walk down the street without that dog lunging or growling or barking at whatever triggers your individual dog?
No. There's limits with every single dog. You can't take every dog to a brewery. You can't, not every dog can go to a dog park. However,
so a part of it is adjusting your expectations as the owner as well.
Absolutely. Exactly. So wherever a dog currently resides in their stress levels and reactivity, my goal always is that my client is able, or whoever reads the book is able, to take more pleasant walks and figure out how to analyze and read their dog's emotional state so they can become the best version of themselves and they can take them more places than they currently are.
Perfect. Jeff Milman, thank you so much. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
I've been talking about dog bite numbers being on the rise for quite some time now, for, I don't know, maybe 2 years or so. And it turns out yet another data point has come in. This one from the United States Postal Service, which says that dog bites and dog attacks increased from 2022 compared to 2023. What do you think? Where do you think, rather, Illinois falls? Illinois falls at number, well, California's one, Texas is number two, Ohio is number three, Pennsylvania is number four, Illinois is number five. And, you know, the dog bite numbers went up in Illinois as they did in all of those other states. Why is that the case? Well, I've talked about it. I'll continue talking about it. And there are a variety of reasons which are just too long for me to describe here. Much more on my website, which is stevedale.tv. Next week, bright and early on WGN.